And he got him. Strike three. Bonifacio is out of there. Swing and a miss, and Verlander strikes him out again.
Line, center field, base hit. Another go-ahead RBI for Hosmer. The Royals break through against Verlander in the sixth.
So Eric Skoglund making his big league debut. Look at this young man right here, Deal. Three-pitch strikeout against Miguel Cabrera. Skoglund's having a heck of a debut.
Oh, man, this is emotional. Mom and Dad, enjoy it.
You outpitched Justin Verlander in your major league debut. How do you put that into words, man?
It's a special one for sure. You know, I'm just trying to go out here and give my team a chance to win and execute pitches, and you know, I think I did that tonight.
And the 2-2 pitch lined into left field. Lindor hits third. He'll come home and score. The Indians are on the board. It's a 3-1 ball game. Rip fair down the right field line. It's an RBI double for Jose Ramirez. It's a one-run game. Deep right field. Encarnacion ties the game. Ramirez gives the Indians the lead as Bradley Zimmer delivers a two-run double to right. Four straight hits in the inning for Cleveland.
Walk.
That was something to it, maybe.
High fly ball, center field in deep. Rajay back at the wall, and it is gone. Jason Kipnis with his sixth home run of the year.
Career high, that'd be awesome. Go get it, young fella.
Swung out and missed. He's got it. A roar from Bauer, and a career best 14 strikeouts in seven innings of work.
When Trev put his foot on the gas, that was really, and we talk so much about shutdown innings, but when we scored, he went out. I think he struck out the next 9 out of 10. And he was aggressive and raring back. And that was really fun to watch.
I've been the guy that was charged on the mound. I've also been the guy that charged the mound a couple of times right there. You know there's a suspension. You know you're going to go without pay. My first thought is that that's exactly what I think everybody expected. You knew that Strickland was going to do that. It wasn't that Harper hit the home runs, but it was the way he rounded the bases that you knew the big guy didn't like. I gained a lot more respect for Bryce Harper than I even had in the past because Strickland's a big man. And you know what? He said, I got to go. Whether I'm going to get in trouble, get hurt, get suspended, it doesn't matter. I got to go out there and protect myself, and he did that.
The interesting thing is, for me, I think that Major League Baseball came down pretty easy on Strickland, and reason being, he's a relief pitcher. How many innings is he really going to miss? You're looking at maybe 3, possibly 4 innings tops, where Bryce Harper, being suspended for 4 games, just do the multiplication yourself. We're looking at 36 innings of quality baseball from your pretty much best hitter in the lineup, your number 3 hitter in the lineup. So yes, it's going to be a hard loss for the Washington Nationals.
The one thing I'd like to see change, you know, everybody, when Harper charged the mound the other day, it gets a lot of attention, and then you see suspensions. But you see a lot of balls thrown at guys just as bad, and because they don't charge the mound, nothing happens, or very little happens. You know, the league constantly is telling us, hey, try to keep your guys in line when they get hit. Let's stay away from the brawls, which I understand. But then when something doesn't happen, I'm not encouraging guys to charge the mound. But I think when guys, you can tell when guys are getting thrown at. Very seldom does a guy get hit where you're not raising your eyebrows. You can tell when it's intentional. They need to be a little stronger at taking charge of that.
Welcome to the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
What's going on? Thanks for joining us on this Wednesday afternoon edition of the Extravaganza. We begin at 12 minutes after 3. A little late because of a pretty extensive montage there, but it was good, and all of it was necessary. Tigers lose a pitcher's duel. Justin Verlander is out-dueled by a dude making his debut. Pretty amazing stuff there. Then you had a little bit of the highlights. How about Trevor Bauer with a career-high 14 strikeouts for the Indians? And then, of course, a lot of commentary from Rick Sutcliffe, Eduardo Perez, and Terry Francona, which I really, really appreciated there. He said, I'm not trying to tell guys they should go charge the mound more. Guess what, Tito? I sure as hell am. Go out and get you some. Everything that he just said is 100% true. That there are a lot of guys who throw a lot of purpose pitches, intentionally drilling their opponents, drilling a defenseless hitter for reasons known only to them, whether it's they felt slider, whether it's somebody else took too big a swing off them earlier in the inning, whether it's somebody who may have looked at their home run too long in this pitcher's opinion, whatever it is, they can drill guys with impunity. And there would be no suspension right now today for Hunter Strickland if Bryce Harper had just taken that 98-mile-an-hour heat to the hip and jogged to first base. Even though Strickland intentionally assaulted another player, even though Strickland attempted to start this brawl, if Harper had not gone to the mound and made it a brawl, Strickland is pitching possibly tonight. Hunter Strickland is still on the mound in a relief role, of course, because they can do whatever they want until a batter says enough is enough. If the league isn't going to protect us, if baseball's rules are not going to protect us, then we got to take protection into our own hands. And that's exactly what Bryce Harper did. Welcome again. I appreciate you joining us. We're going to talk a lot of baseball here in the early going, especially since Matt Mowry is going to join us. He is with the Oakland Press, going to talk a little Tigers, in just a second or two. But on this Bryce Harper story, I, like a lot of other people, was livid, simply livid, with baseball's lack of a message being sent to pitchers who are too cowardly to try to get guys out. So they decide to drill guys with the baseball. Hunter Strickland got 6 games. Bryce Harper got 4 games. That has been reduced by a game now, in case you did not note. This just literally happened this afternoon. Baseball has reduced the suspension of Washington Nationals slugger Bryce Harper by 1 game down to 3. So now he will miss 27 innings of baseball. Hunter Strickland, as Perez pointed out in that montage clip that we just had for you from ESPN, Hunter Strickland might miss an inning, 2 innings, 3 innings. How many times would he be used, and would it be for an inning at a time? Probably not. Over the course of 6 games, the next 6 games. No clue. And he won't be missed. He will not be missed for his very, very limited role out of the bullpen for the San Francisco Giants. Bryce Harper will be very much missed for 27 innings for the Washington Nationals. How on earth is Bryce Harper, who's the victim in this story, how does he get the larger punishment, a bigger punishment than the criminal in the story? There's a criminal, there's a victim. There's a perpetrator, and then there's an innocent. The perpetrator gets 1 to 3 innings max off of or suspended from a play over 6 games. Bryce Harper gets 27 innings. Somebody's going to have to explain me. I don't understand what baseball doesn't understand. And I know, you know, they were talking about this a lot this morning on Mike and Mike. And they did their show this morning out of Cleveland, by the way, which is interesting because the Cleveland's, you know, place on the big stage really comes tomorrow for game one. And it's all the way out in the Bay Area for game one of the NBA Finals. But anyway, they were there this morning and they were talking about how you can't just say we're going to allow purpose pitches, we're going to allow intentional beanings for perceived slights that violate some unwritten code in baseball because that's what we've always done. Just because you've always done it doesn't mean it's the right thing to always do. And I think Greenberg said maybe the better way to approach this is if we just invented the game today and we're starting a game and we're putting rules in place, and we come up with baseball, and we have this one. Is this the way we really want to go? Well, if somebody is offended by somebody homering off them twice 3 years ago, they can drill them in the hip, putting their career in jeopardy. You heard what I said, putting their career in jeopardy. Just because you're not throwing up around somebody's head, it does not necessarily mean that it couldn't be career jeopardizing. He hit him in the hip. What if that hits his pelvis? And it's 98. He didn't throw a curveball. 98-mile-an-hour heat. What if he hits him in the pelvis and shatters it? What if he hits him in the thigh in a really weak spot and it breaks his femur? What if he misses high by a foot? You know what's about a foot above your hip bone? Yeah, your rib cage. What if he cracks a couple of those? And Bryce Harper, one of the game's biggest stars, is out for 2 months, 3 months, the season, who knows what. All because this guy got his little feelings hurt 2 or 3 years ago, 2.5 years ago, if you will, in the playoffs. It is simply reprehensible. Baseball has no balls. Baseball has no even desire to fix what is broken with their game. And it is sickening. Hunter Strickland needed a 25-game suspension. That's right, 25, because if he had been a starting pitcher pulling that crap, I want him to miss at least five starts. And since he's a reliever, I want him to miss a significant amount of time, 25 games. How many of those would he have pitched in? How many? You know, maybe seven or eight, I don't know, an inning at a time. Still wouldn't match up to the 27 innings that Bryce Harper has been suspended. Baseball missed a golden opportunity to try to clean up a very, very ugly part of their game. They didn't do it because apparently they don't want to do it. Why? Tradition. Because that's how we've always done it, man. Baseball screwed up yet again. And I am simply disgusted by it. And so should Bryce Harper be. And so should every Nationals player. And if the Nationals lose two out of the next three that Bryce Harper does not play, then you know what? They got a legitimate case for a grievance. It's just simply ridiculous. Joe Torre can kiss my ruby red A. His explanation about why he suspended people the way he did is simply crap. Absolute crap. And remember, Strickland, who's going to get those six games and maybe three innings total of suspension, Strickland would have zero games suspension for drilling Bryce Harper if Harper didn't actually take justice to the mound. Baseball's broken. And I've had just about enough of that crap. All right, opening monologue over. What do you say we shift into some actual baseball news that has something to do with trying to get guys out rather than trying to knock guys out with fastballs to the freaking hip bone? Tigers. Tigers are in a bad way. Let's bring in Matt Mowry. Matt Mowry covers the Tigers for the Oakland Press, and he joins us now here, home of the AAA club, of course, the Toledo Mudhens. Matt, how are you this afternoon? Thanks for joining us.
Not bad. I was just enjoying your monologue as you were going. I didn't want to interrupt that. I wanted to let the flow go.
I appreciate your patience. I kind of forgot we had you scheduled for 3:15.
No
I ranted
problem.
For about 4 minutes more than I wanted to. I'm going to ask your thoughts on that too. But let's get to the Tigers first, and then we'll get your thoughts on that whole baseball scenario with the beaning and the brawl and everything else that happened. I mentioned the Tigers are in a bad way. By my count, they've lost, I want to say, four of their last six and 10 of their last 14. To find themselves four games out of first place. You get a great effort last night by Justin Verlander, the ace, and he is shown up by Erik Skoglund, if I'm saying that right, making his major league debut, and maybe sometimes when it rains, it pours. What's your analysis of what is ailing the Tigers, like I said, winning just four of the last 14?
Well, as we've talked about before, I believe, on here, and as we've talked about with Brad Ausmus, and, over the last four or five, six, seven, 8 years, however long you want to go back, the Tigers have been a team that's built around its high-powered offense. And the fact that they've been shut out five times already, I mean, I mentioned this on Twitter last night. If you take the core of that lineup with Miguel Cabrera, Victor Martinez, JD Martinez, Ian Kinsler, and Justin Upton, you combine their five salaries, and those five players make more money than the Oakland A's opening day payroll,
wow,
the Tampa Bay Rays opening day payroll, the San Diego Padres, and I believe there was one other I can't think of off the top of my head. And no, those aren't high-powered teams, and granted, some of those teams are going through rebuilding. But you have to look at the fact that none of those teams with payrolls less than those five players combined have been shut out five times. None of them have been shut out four times. I think the most was three in that group. And it's one of those things where, yeah, they've had some injuries. And yes, obviously JD was out for a while, and, Miggy has been out off and on, and Kinsler's been out off and on. But Justin Upton's had a reasonably good start to the season, especially compared to last year. And of the rest of them, obviously, with the exception of JD, who came back hot as a firecracker, none of the rest of them are doing anything. And that's right, the problem. If you're getting nothing, I mean, I think a couple of weeks ago when we were kind of doing the 40-game assessment of the Tigers, Ausmus admitted that they'd gotten more than they'd really expected out of the bottom of the order. And, when you look at the contributions that they had from some of the fill-in players like Adusi and Hicks and, how Romine had done, and you know, Tyler Collins when he was hot, obviously, before he went into the slide that led to his DFA, and obviously Alex Avila factors in there too. Yeah, they'd gotten quite a bit out of the bottom part of their lineup, but that was also compared to the top part of their lineup, which has struggled since day one, and I think that's the problem. I mean, the Tigers are, I believe, 14th in runs scored per game, something like 4.6, which is obviously, it's not good, and it also is not good when that's, you know, almost half a run less than you're giving up per game. So it's a team that's built to do something that it's not doing, and then and there, that's a very, very serious flaw at this point.
That's a very good analysis, and you know, when you think about it, we're talking to Matt Maurer, he covers the Tigers for the Oakland Press. You know, when you break down the amount of money these guys make, it's one thing if this was, let's say, a Padres lineup and it's, you know, producing as lowly as it is, especially based on payroll. It's one thing, but, you know, when you come into the season and you look at everything on paper, and that's all what we all do, and we say, okay, you know, on paper, this is where they should stand in the division compared to the paper rosters of the other teams, and, you know, based on career performance and history and age and prime and so on and so forth, this should be a hell of a lot more potent lineup than where it is after about 50 games. The guys that you just mentioned, you know, the five guys with the highest salaries are performing, you know, at some of the lowest levels. So I guess the question is, quite obviously, is it just a matter of one guy getting hot and then it being contagious, which oftentimes happen to get them out of this funk? Because we know the names that you just, you know, that you just ran through are not going to hit like this for 162 games. They're not going to be as underperforming. Unless, of course, there's an injury to one or more than one of them, but they're just better than this. So you know, it's a slow start. I mean, there's other guys who have had slow starts too. Edwin Encarnacion of the Indians, you know, supposed to be the big free agent prize catch, and you know, he's hitting 225 or 230 or something like that, and they expect him to wake up out of it. Do you think these guys will wake up out of it, and that one or two of them getting going will just kind of get the domino effect going?
Well, and that's the million-dollar question, and that's what Tiger fans have to hope. They have to look at the potential of the team. I mean, unless they're as big a pessimist as I am, and you know, so, some of them are on a daily basis. If you look at the potential of the team, yes, this is probably not going to last. But I think the concerning part is they've had some of those guys go on mini streaks. I mean, like we said, JD came back and was hot, and it didn't really do anything. It's not like anybody else, you know, caught that. It wasn't like it was contagious when he was, you know, hitting home runs left and right in his first couple of days back. Right. It didn't really do anything for Mickey. It didn't really do anything for Victor.
That's true.
So, and I think Victor, you know, started out very slow and then started to pick it up, and that didn't really carry off into anybody else. So it's not really that whole, you know, hitting is contagious thing really hasn't shown to be true so far, at least with that core group of guys. But I think, yeah, like you said, track records of all of these guys, you know, if the health is there, I think you're going to see more than this at some point. I mean, if you're not, they're dead in the water. But I think that you look at the track records of all these guys and you look at the abilities. I mean, they're, I believe, six games under 500 against right-handed starters. I mean, all of these guys, they've been just absolutely bamboozled by a couple of rookies. And shoot, on that last road trip, they lost to two rookies making their debut and Mike Pelfrey. I mean, it just that is just mind-boggling how an offense with those kind of names in it, albeit missing a couple of them here and there, that can happen. It's not going to happen. You know, you have to think that at some point, two, three, maybe four of them start getting going. And you could live with one of those guys not being hot at a time, but the fact that usually most given days four of the five have not been hot, it's just been a killer. So yeah, they have to hope that something sparks these guys and sparks them soon.
The obvious question, and it's been a question for the last couple of years whenever things are like this, is, you know, how much patience is there going to be for Brad Ausmus? Is he still, you know, is he here for the season regardless, or if this kind of thing continues and they get no production? If they continue to slide in the standings and it looks like it's going to be kind of another long lost summer, is there a danger that something happens in the season?
Well, I think so. I think, though, you have to look at kind of what the criteria would be for Al Avila to pull the trigger and do that on his own. And I think what he said a couple of years ago when that was really, you know, the biggest question was that really what he was looking at is how Brad was interacting with the team, you know, and watching it firsthand, how he was handling things, how the adversity was wearing on him, and how it was affecting his relationship with the players. And he said if he'd lost the clubhouse, it probably would have happened, but he didn't. So I think that will be the factor more than wins and losses. I mean, obviously, you know, 2 years ago when they went into a sell mode and Al became the GM, you know, and had to kind of make that decision on his own whether or not to keep, you know, a guy that was kind of perceived as a lame duck manager that he had not hired. It would have been very easy for him to come in and, you know, pull the plug right then and bring in his own guy. But he didn't judge it necessarily on wins and losses at that point. So I'm not sure if it's his decision on its face that he will do things any differently this time. The variable in here that we didn't have a couple of years ago is that for all intents and purposes, there's a new owner that we have no idea how he's going to react to things. We know how loyal Mike Ilitch was to everybody he employed in every sport, and we know how hard it was for him. I mean, I don't think the Tigers made an in-season managerial change in 14 years. I'm trying to even think back. It was early 2000s, and I'm trying to even think of which manager it was.
I'm trying to figure the same thing. I don't remember when it happened.
Yeah. So yeah, it's I think that was the only one even then that happened in the Mike Ilitch era. So we're really not sure how Chris Ilitch is going to be different than his dad and things like that. We're not sure if he's going to be the one to pick up the phone to Al Avila and say, hey, make this happen. That's the dynamic that we're not real sure about at this point. He's obviously not said anything publicly. And you know, as I said, if it were simply a decision that Al Avila was going to make on his own, I'd be willing to bet that it probably would not go a whole lot differently than it did a couple of years ago. But we're not sure how that dynamic is working between GM and owner at this point.
Matt Mowry is our guest. He is on the Tigers beat for the Oakland Press, kind enough to join us here in Toledo. Matt, just a couple of other baseball notes. You heard my monologue there at the top of the show, just livid that these pitchers continue to get away with this, and baseball continues to say, oh, well, you know, it takes two to fight, and, you know, this guy started the fight, so he gets some games, and this guy defended himself, and he gets some games, and it's just so much crap. Because, like I said, if Harper had not even charged the mound, Hunter Strickland is sitting there unscathed. Not a minute or an inning lost, not a dime of salary or anything else. He just continues to drill whoever he wants to drill, who goes deep on him and hurts his feelings, which is essentially what this was. And no matter what the reason is for drilling another player, it has always bothered me that the pitchers get away with it unless the guy charges the mound. And if the guy charges the mound, yes, the pitcher may indeed get some games suspended, but so does the hitter, and he's the victim in this who's actually trying to defend himself. So you saw what happened. Strickland got 6 games. Harper got 4. It was reduced to 3. I pray to God I pray to God about a lot of things. I won't pray to him about baseball. But I hope to the baseball gods that they don't reduce Strickland's from 6 down to 5 or 4. What's your take?
Well, and I think just from on an aside, I think Tim Flannery, the old Giants coach, had the best take of all, or at least the most humorous take, on Twitter a couple of days ago. He said that if Strickland's going to try to get revenge on every guy who's hit a homer off him, he's probably going to hit his pitch limit pretty quickly. That's not a select club of people.
That's a great line. I missed that one, but it's exactly right.
Sure, look, he's been a known hothead, and that's not surprising to anyone. I believe that was the same playoffs where he was stomping around every time he gave up a home run. They gave up a bunch in that playoff run. I mean, even though they won it was not for the contributions of Hunter Strickland. But I agree with you in a lot of senses. It's silly to have that kind of archaic form of retribution built in. And here's the other part. As you said, we're talking about injuries here. We're talking about the potential for injury. And that's always in talking to managers, even when, you know, Jim Leland was the manager of the Tigers, and you pick his brain about what's different now in the game of baseball than it was in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And he, very simple answer, money. Money is the difference. That's why pitchers are treated differently. That's why they're babied. That's why prospects are treated differently. That's why, you know, everybody is treated differently. People, you know, it's not the same game from that aspect simply because of all of the money invested in it. And that's the mind-boggling part. With Major League Baseball, not condoning it, but really not severely punishing it. What they're
saying, I think they're condoning it. I'm going to jump in on that. I think you could have stopped there. They're condoning it. They're saying, you know what, this isn't our problem. Let the players figure it out for themselves. Here's a little token suspension to say, oh, now, guys, you shouldn't fight. But you know what? Let's let them take care of it themselves. And eventually, you know what? Somebody is going to drill Buster Posey, or somebody else is going to wear one for the Giants to get back at Strickland, who will never have to bat being a reliever in the National League. He'll never, ever have to bat. And somebody else is going to take one, and then on and on and on these kind of things go.
Right. Well, and you even heard Buster Posey use that as part of the reason that he did not. Now, I'm not sure I fully 100% believe Buster when he said, you know, that the reason he didn't get involved in the scrum is that there are a lot of big bodies flying around. It's true, and you see that, you know, Mike Morse actually had to go onto the concussion DL because, you know, because
Samardzija drilled him, his own guy.
right, exactly. The football guy drilled him. Obviously that is true that there are bodies flying around and you don't want to get hurt. And for somebody in Buster Posey's situation who's already missed a significant amount of time for something that was rather archaic in, you know, letting catchers get blown up at the plate, they got that rule out. They managed to change things with the slide to second, or, you know, on the bases as well as at home plate to protect catchers, to protect infielders, all of those kind of things. And you just wonder why this particular one, they're lagging so far behind in what is realistically player safety. It's the player safety issue, and it just amazes me that they still continue to drag their feet on doing something about it. It wouldn't surprise me, given the money that's invested in these players, because you know what happens. You know, when there's retaliation, especially in the American League, where you can't go back after the pitcher who threw it, you go after the best player. Well, that's usually also the highest paid player.
Right.
And if you're talking about a Miguel Cabrera, or even if it's a Sano or whoever it is, those are the guys that wear these pitches. I wouldn't be shocked if at some point the owners, you know, individually go, hey, we're not going to have that. We're not going to have that happen with our teams where we're risking, you know, the health of Miguel Cabrera so you can get, you know, some masculinity point across
right
to, you know, all of your buddies. We're not going to do that. That's not going to be allowed. We're going to fine you X amount, or we're going to, you know, and obviously that would take negotiations to have that be allowable for them to do, you know, that kind of thing, or at least figuring out what loophole you could put that under, if that's conduct unbecoming, or however you would want to phrase that. But it wouldn't shock me if at some point the owners take a stand on that and go, look, with the money we're paying these guys, we're not going to put them in jeopardy by letting you, you know, use them for target practice.
Well, and, you know, so, and that's a great point. That is certainly, you know, one way to deal with it. But to me, the other one is, even before you start talking about, as you say, the highest paid players are going to get drilled and yada, yada, just simply put it in the hands of the managers and tell the managers, hey, idiot, do you see the new rule now? The new rule is you drill somebody intentionally, it's 25 games. And if you're one of my starters, I lose you for 5 turns through the rotation. I can't afford to do that. Keep it over the freaking plate. Don't take out your hurt feelings on somebody and cost us 25 games, me, 5 starts from you. Hey, reliever, 25 games. I could use you, who knows, 8 to 10, 12 to 13 times in those games, an inning at a piece. That hurts me. That hurts my ability to win games. And make the managers get it through these pitchers' heads that you can't do this. Now, unintentional get-away-from-you pitches are always going to happen. Will there have to be some sense of guesswork, if you will? Guesswork isn't the right word. But evaluations on the part of baseball people. And that's what you have to make sure the people who are doing this. Baseball people know when pitches are intentional and when they're not. Like the one over Manny Machado's head a couple of weeks back, like the one that just drilled Harper. These aren't guessing games. Everybody knows these were intentional. And if you do something like this intentionally, you're going to be gone for 25 games, 5 starts, whatever the case might be. Then the managers are the ones who are going to have to get it through to their pitchers' heads, and that will stop all of this nonsense. I don't think we'll have to really worry about, you know, the best player wearing one from the other side.
Sure, and I don't disagree with you one bit. I think if there's enough incentive or disincentive for this to happen, I think it goes away. I think something that's
got to be the disincentive part, the punitive part. Yeah. That's where it's got to be.
Yep.
Hey, Matt, real quick on Posey. Were you disappointed that he didn't go out to try to protect his teammate, even if he didn't like him or agree with him? Should he have wrapped up Harper, grabbed him around the shoulders, and at least just held on to him, even if he didn't want to go out there and get into the, you know, into the big brawl, but just hold on to Harper and slow him down? Or were you okay with him saying, you know what, idiot, speaking of Strickland, you know what, idiot, you shouldn't have done it, you're on your own, good luck?
Yeah, and that's more or less my take. I get the whole teammate thing. I get the, you know, we're in it together, those kind of things. And I see how it could potentially be something that, you know, is divisive if a bunch of the other teammates on the Giants think that he did something wrong by not, quote-unquote, protecting his pitcher. But for Strickland to have anything to say to him, the response to Strickland would be simple. It would just be, your butt wrote that check, not mine.
Yep.
I'm not putting my body on the line, you know, and my career on the line to protect you for something idiotic that you did. So if, from that standpoint, just in a vacuum, no, I don't think that Buster Posey did anything wrong. It was clear that he was going to have no part of that. And even when he did trot out toward the mound, it was rather half-hearted.
You know, it wasn't even just Posey, too. Did you watch the infield? It wasn't like they sprinted in there, hey, Harper, how dare you attack our pitcher? And most of the infield kind of looked and watched it go for a second or two and then kind of trotted over at about three-quarter speed. There wasn't like a sprint other than Samardzija coming in, but there wasn't like a sprint to go out there and protect this guy. I think they all felt like, hey, you're being a punk. Don't do that. This is not how the game's played.
Right. Well, and we even saw that a little bit with Pedroia's comments when he more or less said, you know, when there was a retaliatory pitch thrown at Machado's head, I didn't ask for that. That's not how we do things.
And that
could have been just as divisive. But you got to understand with that situation, I think it's clear how much of the leader he is of the Boston clubhouse, and I think it's probably just as true for Posey in the Giants clubhouse. Right. People don't necessarily think of him in that same way as, you know, the quote unquote captain of a team. But I think that's probably as much his clubhouse in San Francisco as it is, you know, Pedroia's in Boston.
There are some very defined leaders in that organization, sure. And he's certainly one of them. Hey, Matt Mowry from the Oakland Press, really appreciate the baseball chat, my friend. Hopefully the Tigers get it turned around so the next time we talk, we're talking about a rise in the standings and not a lost summer, because we're getting pretty close to that territory now past Memorial Day. So we'll look forward to catching up with you again soon, all right?
Sounds good. Anytime. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, Matt. Matt Mowry from the Oakland Press joining us. It's 3:40. Hey, I want to remind you that ESPN 106.5, The Ticket, and the Michigan International Speedway have a chance for you to win tickets to each event at the MIS the weekend of June 16th. To qualify, text the word or the phrase MIS ticket, MIS for Michigan International Speedway, MIS ticket, to the number 64636, short code 64636, and you could win tickets. Good luck to you from the Michigan International Speedway and Toledo's ESPN 106.5, The Ticket. Get a quick timeout, get a sports center here, come back in, check in with Cushlin and Gargano, and hopefully you as well right here on ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
Now back to the Bob France Extravaganza, ESPN 106.5, The Ticket.
All righty then. You know, thanks for joining us, 3:50, by the way, here at ESPN 106.5. The Ticket, thanks to Matt Mowry again. Jim Cushlin is checking in with us from Yark. He's out there washing cars or something like that, vacuuming them out, I think, things like that, doing some detailing. Frank Argano is in running the show in the home studio as well. Guys, I want to stay on baseball for a second, but for a different reason. And if I sound a little melancholy, it's because I'm trying to hide the fact that I'm pissed. One of my favorite players to watch in the last 20 years or more is about to hit his 600th home run, and nobody cares. Do you guys hear anybody talking about Albert Pujols? Is anybody celebrating? Are they breaking in? Are they breaking into live coverage of other events every time he comes to the dish now? With a chance to hit number 600. Is anybody paying any real close attention to Albert Pujols' chase? Jim Cushlin out there at Yark. Have you noticed it?
I am so, so very happy that you brought this up, Bob, because if you didn't just now, I was going to bring it up. This has been eating at me all day long. I mean, I consider myself a baseball person, more, first and foremost, more, as you are aware. I wasn't even fully aware that he was right at the number until I saw the crawl last night. Albert Pujols, just his 599th career home run. I'm like, wait a minute, that came up pretty fast. And this is another example. We brought this subject up so many times. This is another example of Major League Baseball fail when it comes to imaging and marketing of their players and all that stuff. This is part of the reason the game is drifting downwards in terms of popularity. I even just conducted here at the Arc Nissan, and you can go check it out. I made a Facebook Live video of it where I cataloged the results. 10 people hanging around the showroom, some sales guys, some just regular customers. And I asked him a simple question. Are you aware that Albert Pujols is at 599 career home runs? And out of the 10 people I talked to, only 3 were actually aware, which strangely actually beats my projection. I thought it would only be 2 out of 10 because this is another example of MLB fail. Albert Pujols, one of the best players in the last 20 years, is about to become the 9th human ever to hit 600 home runs. And if anybody's talking about anything baseball-related in the last day or so, what's it been? That brawl involving Bryce Harper and Hunter Strickland.
Well, no, I'm not going to go there. That deserves some attention. That's a big deal. That's an MVP. That's a former MVP from 2 years ago, and it could be MVP because he's easily the best player in the National League this year.
Exactly.
That was a big story. Let's stay on the brawl. Let's stay on the Pujols thing for a second.
Right, and my point I was trying to say was that Pujols in 600 home runs should be story 1A. But even by Major League Baseball, it seems to have been relegated to the back page. And you wonder why they keep losing popularity. This is another example. I've been so steamed about this all day long.
The real issue here for me as to why Albert Pujols' journey to 600 here is being ignored is because the number has been passed so many times in the last 10 or 15 years. That's the big problem here. Which leads to the problem that I always talk about whenever we talk about the all-time home run list. Because it has been perverted.
Yep.
It has been bastardized. It has been hijacked. It has been stolen by steroid cheats that I cannot abide. I cannot accept this. And this is the thing. There was a time, not too terribly long ago, when the top of the home run list read Hank Aaron 755, Babe Ruth 714, Willie Mays 660, and then Frank Robinson 586, and that was it.
Yep.
There were only three guys over. Hold on, did I lose my place here? No.
No, you're right. Three guys.
Three guys over 600, and then Frank at 586 was number 4 on the list. But because of the steroid era that I will never, ever forgive for this reason, as we sit here and look at the history, and not only the history of the game, and people like Hank Aaron, Babe Ruth, Willie Mays, all getting knocked down the list. Frank Robinson's about to be knocked out of the top 10 very soon. Because not just the historical figures being knocked out, but the fact that Albert Pujols was a contemporary of some of these other guys who cheated. This guy, Albert Pujols, has done everything the right way, in much the same way a couple of the other guys who recently crossed over 600 have done. And because it's been done by the others who cheated, it's not going to be as celebrated as it should be.
You're right.
Barry Bonds, top of the list, steroid cheat. Alex Rodriguez, number 4 on the list with 696, steroid cheat. Sammy Sosa, number 8 on the list, 609, steroid cheat. And I'll stop there. I won't even go down into Mark McGwire at 11th and Rafael Palmeiro at 13th.
Yeah, just stick with the 8 at 600, and you've already crossed off 3 of the 8.
Exactly. This is my point. My larger point here is what should be happening. Now, again, because some of his contemporaries did it recently too, it's still going to take some of the luster off of Albert when he does it, but the all-time home run list should read 1, Hank Aaron, 2, Babe Ruth, 3, Willie Mays, 4, Ken Griffey Jr., who sits at 6 because of this, the cheaters. Griffey,
630.
Like Pujols, Griffey Jr., did it the right way.
Mm-hmm.
Stayed away from the drugs that Bonds took and McGwire took and Sosa took and the rest of them. was never even mentioned as one of the, you know, the suspected users in the Mitchell report or anything else. Then where it stands next is it should be Jim Thome, who would be 5 all-time. Instead, he's 7 all-time. He finished his career with 6-12. And again, that great big corn-fed mule was always a big Popeye forearm having son of a blank back when he was younger. I mean, he put on more weight as he got older, obviously,
sure.
But he never had the Barry Bonds muscle build, head growing 3 hat sizes nonsense.
Bingo.
Jim Thome was always going to be a masher, and he was. So what we should have happening right here is Albert Pujols should be about to become only the 6th player in baseball history to cross over the 600 home run plateau, legally and naturally.
Yep.
Bonds, Hank Aaron, the Babe, Mays, Griffey Jr., Jim Thome, and now Albert Pujols. He should be number 6 all-time, crossing over that. He will probably pass Thome, who finished with 6-12, to get to 5th, and then he will challenge. I mean, he's obviously a shell of what he was. He's what, 40 or somewhere in that neighborhood is Albert Pujols. He has slowed down his pace, quite obviously. So I don't know. He might catch Griffey Jr. at 6:30. It's possible. But this is a guy who is a 3-time league MVP. This is a guy who finished 2nd 4 times in MVP balloting, for crying out loud. In the first 10 years of his career, Albert Pujols averaged 300 with 30-plus home runs and 100-plus RBIs, with an OPS of over 1,000 in 77 postseason games. So in other words, he's one of the greatest hitters of all time.
Yep.
Period. I asked this question last year when Miggy was on one of his tears, and we talked about the best right-handed hitters you've ever seen, where does Miguel Cabrera rank, and so on and so forth, and we would run through a bunch of names about some of the greatest sweet swings we've ever seen. One of the guys I always brought up is Albert Pujols. Albert Pujols is one of the great power and clutch and average hitters in the history of the sport. He's about to cross 600. And nobody's paying attention.
Yeah, nobody's paying attention, and nobody's noticed. And you're correct to point out that maybe the hangover from the steroid era is part of it, and it is, but there's still no excuse for Major League Baseball not
to be
able
to
do this.
Quite frankly, to be honest with you, Jim, even when Thome passed it, there wasn't as much fanfare as there should be because, well, look at all the other guys who have done it. The cheaters in front of them.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, most of the great all-timers who are doing this now after the steroid era are still being punished, if you will, because the steroid guys got there first, their numbers are bigger, and so on and so forth. And it's just so frustrating to me. Baseball's got so many things that it can fix about itself if they were really serious. And you know what I heard on a different talk show today? Somebody say they couldn't believe that Bud Selig was going into the Hall of Fame. How can they let Bud Selig in, the caller argued, how could they let Bud Selig into the Hall of Fame when they're not letting in all of the steroid cheats that operated with their steroid PED-aided records under Bud Selig's watch? He allowed it to happen. He allowed the game to be revived and saved after the 1994 strike by allowing this to happen. If they're guilty, the caller argued, he is guilty. The host of the show that I was listening to said, yeah, I agree, which is why all of them should be allowed in. I took the opposite approach. Don't let Bud Selig in. Keep Barry Bonds out. Keep Roger Clemens out. Keep Sammy Sosa out. And on down the line we go. And don't let Bud Selig, who let that stain on the history of the game, happen on his watch.
Yeah, you've brought this up in the past. I don't think it was you I originally heard this from. I heard this bantered about before, but I know you have this opinion. I love the idea. You don't formalize him in the Hall of Fame, but that needs a section to explain what happened. Now, they don't get their own busts, but there needs to be a steroid era kind of exhibit in the Hall. It has to be demonstrated.
Put a plaque up that says, here is a list of career statistics of a bunch of guys who cheated. Do with it what you will. Literally. And I mean, put it up, with a frame around it that said, here are the stats of some of the greatest offensive numbers or pitching numbers in the history of the game, but these guys all cheated. You can take a picture of it if you wish, or you can walk by it and ignore them because they cheated if you wish. Do it that way, because that's what the Hall of Fame and Museum is all about. Let people make of it what they will, but do not honor them with a plaque.
Correct.
With their name next to the other Hall of Famers who did it the right way.
Wholeheartedly agree, and the more I've heard that argument, the more I'm in favor of it.
I'm with it, too. All right, it's 4:01. We're going to quick time out. Top of the hour, Sports Center coming your way. Want to get you on the phones next hour, 866-240-1.
Tasio is out of there. Swing and a miss, and Verlander strikes him out again.
Line, center field, base hit. Another go-ahead RBI for Hosmer.
The Royals break through against Verlander in the sixth.
So Eric Skoglund making his big league debut.
Look at this young man right here, Deal.
Three-pitch strikeout against Miguel Cabrera. Skoglund's having a heck of a debut.
Oh, man, this is emotional. Mom and Dad, enjoy it.
You outpitched Justin Verlander in your major league debut. How do you put that into words, man?
It's a special one for sure. I'm just trying to go out here and give my team a chance to win and execute pitches, and I think I did that tonight.
And the 2-2 pitch lined into left field. Lindor hits third. He'll come home and score. The Indians are on the board. It's a 3-1 ball game. Rip fair down the right field line. It's an RBI double for Jose Ramirez. It's a one-run game. Deep right field. Encarnacion ties the game. Ramirez gives the Indians the lead as Bradley Zimmer delivers a two-run double to right. Four straight hits in the inning for Cleveland.
Walk. There was something to it, maybe.
High fly ball center field in deep. Rajay back at the wall, and it is gone. Jason Kipnis with his sixth home run of the year.
Career high, that'd be awesome. Go get it, young fella.
Swung out and missed. He's got it. A roar from Bauer and a career best 14 strikeouts in seven innings of work.
Trev put his foot on the gas. That was really, and we talked so much about shutdown innings. But when we scored, he went out. I think he struck out the next 9 out of 10. And he was aggressive, raring back. And that was really fun to watch.
I've been the guy that was charged on the mound. I've also been the guy that charged the mound a couple of times right there. You know there's a suspension. You know you're going to go without pay. My first thought is that that's exactly what I think everybody expected. You knew that Strickland was going to do that. It wasn't that Harper hit the home runs, but it was the way he rounded the bases that you knew the big guy didn't like. I gained a lot more respect for Bryce Harper than I even had in the past because Strickland's a big man. And you know what? He said, I got to go. Whether I'm going to get in trouble, get hurt, get suspended, it doesn't matter. I got to go out there and protect myself, and he did that.
The interesting thing is, for me, I think that Major League Baseball came down pretty easy on Strickland, and reason being, he's a relief pitcher. How many innings is he really going to miss? You're looking at maybe 3, possibly 4 innings tops, where Bryce Harper, being suspended for 4 games, just do the multiplication yourself. We're looking at 36 innings of quality baseball from your pretty much best hitter in the lineup, your number 3 hitter in the lineup. So yes, it's going to be a hard loss for the Washington Nationals.
The one thing I'd like to see change, everybody, when Harper charged the mound the other day, it gets a lot of attention, and then you see suspensions. But you see a lot of balls thrown at guys just as bad, and because they don't charge the mound, nothing happens, or very little happens. The league constantly is telling us, hey, try to keep your guys in line when they get hit. Let's stay away from the brawls, which I understand. But then when something doesn't happen, I'm not encouraging guys to charge the mound. But I think you can tell when guys are getting thrown at. Very seldom does a guy get hit where you're not raising your eyebrows. You can tell when it's intentional. They need to be a little stronger at taking charge of that.
This is the Bob France Afternoon Extravaganza on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket.
I'll tell you what, I could not agree more with Terry Francona. You can tell. If you're a baseball man, baseball men can tell. And ultimately, as we begin hour number 2 right here on ESPN 106.5 The Ticket, still talking a lot about the base brawl from Bryce Harper and Hunter Strickland, the punk A that he is. And I'm just going to call guys what they are. I'm really, really tired of political correctness. He's a punk. Hunter Strickland is 6'4" and 220 pounds. It's a big dude. And yes, I'm calling him a punk. And no, it's not because he's not in front of me and I'm here for the safety, behind the safety of a microphone. I'm just calling punks punks. I don't care if they're as big as, oh, for crying out loud, why can I not remember the huge, who's the massive defensive tackle? Vince Wilfork. if there's 390 pounds. You know what? If you're a punk, you're a punk. And that's what he is. He's a thug. Hunter Strickland is a thug. He's a punk thug, whatever you want to call him, because he stood there on the mound and threw a lethal object, which a baseball can be, and you know, jeopardized the career of one of the best baseball players in the world, probably one of the four best baseball players in the world right now, and that would be Bryce Harper, because he got his feelings hurt a couple of years ago in the playoffs because Harper went yard on him twice. It's a thug move. It's a punk move. It's a drive-by shooting. That's what it is. You know what this is? I'm talking myself into the best metaphor that I can find. This is a punk thug on an inner city street doing a drive-by on a house and screeching the tires. Down the road they go. Got my shots in, and I'm out before anybody can come after me. Well, lo and behold, Bryce Harper jumped in his car after his house got shut up and gave chase and tried to beat down the thug who did it. Because that's what it is when a pitcher who's never going to take a pitch himself, even though he's in the National League, he's a reliever, and they're not going to let the pitcher bat in a late game, late inning part of a game in which the relief pitcher is on. So he's never going to have to stand there and face it, and he can do something like that. Buster Posey thought it was a punk move. The Giants infield thought it was a thug move. Everybody knew it was a driveway. That's why a drive-by. That's why nobody wanted to come and save him. And Bryce Harper went out and got his piece of the action, which he should have. Tito Francona is 100% right. These guys can stand there with impunity and throw at hitters, and unless the batter, knowing that he's going to get a suspension himself, charges, it's the only way to give the pitcher a suspension for doing it. Think about the insanity of that rule. I mean, think about it. It would be like, again, just to use a metaphor, a thug taking a shot at somebody and missing, and the police officer seeing it, and a federal prosecutor seeing it and saying, well, it didn't hit anything. It's all good. See ya. But if the guy who was shot at fires back, Oh, now we got ourselves a gunfight. Now there's going to be an arrest. Yeah, and I'm going to arrest you, the guy who shot back, and you're going to get punished. You're going to get charged for firing that weapon, and the other guy is going to get charged too. But we wouldn't have charged him if you hadn't shot back. That's the best metaphor I can come up with.
It's pretty spot on, honestly.
You know, I thank you, Frank. And I apologize to anybody who's sensitive, but again, I'm tired of this freaking political correctness. I'm obviously not condoning any kind of those kinds of things, but it's a reality in society. And if you want to do it a different way, and if you want to take bullets out of it and use fists, that's fine. It would be like a guy coming up to a stranger on the street and throwing a punch at him, but not knocking him out, and the police officer saying, and the guy who took the punch just kind of shrugging his shoulders and walking away. Police officer saying, oh, that's not really an assault. Guy's okay. Guy walked away. But if the guy who got punched turns around and throws a right cross back, now we got ourselves a fight. Now we're going to punish both of you for fighting. Not going to punish the first guy if it's only a one-punch affair. Not going to punish him. But if you come back at him, well, now we got to take you both in.
You know what I want to see?
That's what they just did, for crying out loud, to Harper. Yes, Frank.
I want to see Bryce Harper come up to bat and just go yard against the Giants and just take his sweet time trotting around those bases, give a nice Joey Bats bat flip. I want to see it all.
I would pay really, really good money for a ticket to that game. I would. I'm like you. I would like to. But you know what's really funny about it? For all of the cockiness that Bryce Harper kind of exudes,
mm-hmm.
and he does. He puts off an attitude and an ego that comes with being a 16-year-old who's on the cover of Sports Illustrated under the headline, Baseball's LeBron. At 16. You may not remember that. I do. Do you remember that at Sports Illustrated?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Baseball's LeBron, the baseball chosen one. Bryce Harper, it could be, you know, understood a little bit if he's just a little bit cocky. And he is. But even this, in my opinion, based on what we see from him, despite that cockiness, this is a guy that's also true to the game. I don't think he'd do it. I think if he jacked one the next time he faced the Giants again, especially if it was Strickland, my God, would I love to see him just totally, pose and, like you said, bat flip to the heavens, the entire thing.
Yeah, I want everything.
Oh, my God, I would love to see that too, but I don't think he would. I think he would once again try to prove I'm not the problem here in this situation. He was the problem. I homered off him and hit one to the third deck in the playoffs. And did I stop and look at it for a second to see where the hell it was going? Yeah, but not long. And I didn't do one of the slow roll like an old man stumbling to the toilet speed in the middle of the night trip around the bases. He didn't just sashay and saunter his way around. No, he ran it. And he ran it quickly. And then when he did it again, two nights later or the next night or whatever it was, when he hit a homer off of Strickland again, and this one was right down the line, he stopped and waited, and the reason why, it was right down the line. Inside the foul pole or outside of it. All right, fair ball. What did he do? Did he stroll and saunter around? No, he ran quickly. He's not a guy who's going to pose and do that to show you up. He's going to be excited, might fist pump. But he's not going to do that, and I think even if he was getting his revenge or trying to get his revenge, as you point out, I still don't think he'd do it. I would love to see it. I'm with you, but I don't think he would do it.
I'm not sure if he would do it, honestly, either, guys. But I will say this, the next time the Nationals and the Giants play, it'll be in Washington, three games, August 11th, 12th, and 13th. So we'll be way past all the suspension. So we'll find out some of our answers to those couple questions then.
Yeah, we will. And by the way, you know what? In addition to Bryce Harper being suspended for the now three games since it was reduced one, he played last night and played like crap. To think that, don't think for a second that this isn't still on him a little bit. You know, this kind of thing can rattle you somewhat. And he was 0-for-5 with 3 strikouts. So, you know, there's an effect on this, and again, a punishment, if you will, that Bryce Harper should not have to be paying, a price that he should not have to be paying for the actions of the pitcher, who is just, like I said, a punk thug, who did a drive-by. He did a drive-by and was hoping nobody would chase him. Guess what? Somebody chased him, caught him, and now he got a little bit of a punishment for that, too. Not nearly enough, by the way. All right, real quick, guys, and I want to talk more about this. If you want to get on the phones at 866-240-1065, I want to play for you just a short piece from ESPN's Outside the Lines, talking about why it is that Albert Pujols and the monumental achievement he's about to make is not getting the fanfare and the excitement and the coverage that it certainly warrants. And I'm still very, very frustrated about that because he is one of my favorite players.
Earth and watch on CNN. Terrence, good to see you. It's relatively quiet on this. Yeah. What do you make of this relative quiet? I mean, this is a rare thing.
Well, I mean, first of all, I'll put this into perspective here. They've been playing Major League Baseball since 1869. And as you just pointed out, you don't even need two hands to count the number of guys who got 600-plus home runs. But there's a couple of things going on here. And the first thing is, nobody cares about the Angels, Bob, and they haven't since the Rally Monkey was a baby back around 2001 and 2002. That's number one. But here's a big thing, all right? You look at the 600-plus club, there's a generation of people, and I'm in that generation, that will always consider the true 600-plus hitters to be Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, and Willie Mays.
Maybe I'm going to pause here. Guys, I did not listen to the audio that I'm playing for you right now before I came on the air. I love it. Terrence Moore is identifying exactly what I said in the last segment about the true top of the home run board, that it is Hank Aaron 1, Babe Ruth 2, Willie Mays 3, and should always be, unless somehow Albert Pujols can hit another 100 home runs, which isn't going to happen. But it should always be. I just want you to know, I did not parrot my talking points from Terrence Moore. I did not listen to that until we're playing it right now. I just came across this during my research in the middle of the Top of the Hour Sports Center and the spot break we just had, and I found this question about why Albert Pujols' story is so quiet, or his milestone is so quiet, and I'm hearing this for the first time like you. So I don't want anybody to think I stole the idea. But I'm glad to know that great minds think alike. Terrence Moore obviously has a great mind. Moore.
And so Ken Griffey
Jr.
in there.
Whispers, right?
And that's where I'm getting to, because these other guys, you got the PED things going on, the controversies, and then you got Jim Thome. Nobody takes him seriously because it looks like more like a fluke. All this is hurting Albert Pujols.
Also,
I don't know what he means by that part. I don't know what he means by Jim Thome looks like a fluke. What does that mean?
I don't know. 612 home runs. I don't know if that's fluky.
With no allegation.
No allegations.
He's one of the best power hitters.
I mean, just
and he didn't even mention. It sounds like he didn't even mention Griffey one way or the other.
No, he didn't. He's just focusing on what I kind of focused on there, which is the guys who cheated to get into that list. Alex Rodriguez, Barry Bonds, obviously, who else was
Sosa.
In the top 10 that shouldn't be?
Sammy Sosa.
Sammy Sosa, yeah. And then obviously when you get down into the next 10, then you get McGuire, Palmeiro, Manny Ramirez, three more cheaters. So it's been, you know, the whole list has been hijacked and co-opted by so many of these cheats. Okay, I want to play the rest of this conversation to see where else it goes, like I said, because I just stumbled across this. We're playing it blind.
So, Albert, statistically and in fact, look, a heck of a ball player, but a diminished superstar statistically, certainly, since moving from St. Louis to Anaheim.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about that. And his first 11 years with the St. Louis Cardinals, he finished in the top five in the National League MVP of balloting 10 times. 6 years with the Angels, he's made the All-Star game once, one playoff game. And I tell you, going back to this obscurity with the Angels, when people do think about the Angels, they think of one guy, Mike Trout. And I tell you what, Bob, there's more talk right now about Mike Trout and his thumb injury than there is about Albert Pujols right on the verge of 600.
Well, you talked about these suspicions, and some of them proven, some of them never proven about some of these players. Is there a larger statement about baseball, just period, and its place in our culture here?
I don't know if it's necessarily that, because I was there when at Yankee Stadium when A-Rod, Alex Rodriguez, hit number 600. And there was a lot of enthusiasm around that. That was back in 2010. Now, a lot of that's Yankees, a lot of that's New York and what have you, but the tickets were going at a pretty high price at that mm-hmm. time. I just think that we're at a period right now where when it comes to home runs, the biggest thing that people think about probably is length. Okay, you look at what Aaron Judge, and people talking about how long he can hit him, or a guy like Stanton, that sort of thing. It's more so that, it's more so the rumors of PEDs than anything else.
Exit velo, distance, all big numbers. Terrence Moore, thank you so much.
All right, so that's that was from Outside the Lines. Like I said, just stumbled across it, wanted to listen to it about why. And I think a lot of that is true. A lot of it we already said, guys, about Albert Pujols following up on the heels, if you will, of a bunch of other guys who went into the 600 club, three of which were cheaters and two of which were legitimate, Griffey Jr. and Jim Thome. But it has happened more frequently, and therefore it's not as big of a deal now that he is doing it. But what bothers me is this part about, well, you know, ever since he went to Anaheim, his numbers started to really drop off. Yeah? So what? Everybody's numbers drop off unless you're a steroid cheater as you get older. That's kind of the point of this whole thing. You know, this is, you know, I said he was 40. He's not. He's 37. He's 37 years old. He is certainly not what he was. Talking about Albert Pujols, but what he was simply spectacular. And it's impossible to hold up that standard. Let me just throw a few numbers at you for the sake of thoroughness here. First year in the league, 2001, at the young age. Well, now I got to figure that out, don't I? He would have been 20, right? He's 37 now, and he's 17 years ago, so 21, 22.
Yep.
Albert Pujols hit 37 bombs and drove in 130 runs in a rookie. It hit 329. That's pretty good debut, I would say. Next year, 34, 127 while hitting 314. Next year, 43, 124, while hitting 359. What? Yeah, that's how good Albert Pujols has been. Next year, 2004, 46, 123, 331. Next year, 41, 117 driven in, hit 330. 49, 137, 331. Are you starting to get the picture here? One of the greatest hitters, period, of all time. 2007, 32, 103, 327. Next year, 37, 116. He hit 357. If you need him, there he is. In 2009, 47 more. Jesus Christ.
And that led the league that year?
This is in the National League, by the way, for crying out loud. It's in the National League, where it's considered to be a little bit tougher to put up these kinds of monster mash numbers. Let's see, 135 driven in, 327. In 2010, that's 42 more for you. 118 driven in.
Both of those led the league.
312 batting average. And 2011, his last year in St. Louis, 37, 99, and hit 299. His first year under 300. My God, the temerity, the gall of this guy to hit under 300. Now let's talk about those years in L.A. with the Angels, or in Anaheim with the Angels. Now, admittedly, yes, the numbers do drop off, and he did have a few injury issues, or at least in one season. But let's still, this isn't like this guy went from, you know, hey, he hit 550 home runs in St. Louis, and it's taken him 6 years to hit the last 50 to get to 600. So it's a crawl, not by any stretch of the freaking imagination. You just heard Terrence Moore ripping him for you know, the L.A. years. Well, his first year, 30 more, 105, 285. Boy, that's terrible. Think the Tigers could use somebody with 30-105 and 285 in their lineup right now?
Anybody could use that, not just the Tigers.
Well, I'm just picking on the Tigers because they suck right now, and their batting order is terrible, as Matt Mowry just pointed out. Nobody's producing, especially their highest-paid players. In 2013, he was injured. Only played 99 games instead of 150 or 160, so only had 17 more home runs in 99 games and 64 RBIs while batting 258, which is a career low, or was a career low. In 2014, he came back healthy, played 159 games, hit 28 home runs, 37 doubles, 105 more driven in, 272. About the only thing that's losing out here, really, is the batting average.
Batting average,
yeah. Up into the 330s and 340s like it was before. But the power numbers are still there. Matter of fact, 2015, 2 years ago, this is not some ancient story here. As you just heard Terrence Moore and Bob Lee talking about, you know, the production has dropped off so much in L.A. You know, people just aren't that excited. He had 40 freaking home runs in 2015. Drove in 95, so there were a lot of solo shots, which isn't his fault. Hit 244, which is his career low. Brought that back up by 24 points last year to 268. Hit another 31 and drove in another .119. So in his 3 years out of 5 healthy years in Anaheim, when I say 5 healthy years, hold on, let me do that again. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Incorrect. 3 out of his 4 healthy years in Anaheim, he still had over 100 RBIs in each one and at least 30 home runs. 3 out of 4, because you can't count 2013 when he only had 99 games played. So in 3 of the other 4, and I'm not counting this year, of course, because it's just getting started. Well, not getting started, but you understand the point. He's 47 games in. He's hitting 254. He has 8 home runs and 38 driven in. He's pacing for this season, if I can pull that up real quick. Maybe I can't. Hold on a second. Yeah, projected for 24 and another 112 driven in. Another 100 RBI year, and they're acting like, you know, well, he's crawling to the finish line to get this 600. In whose eyes?
No.
The lack of respect. It is just so very, very disrespectful to be treating one of the games. I just ran on those numbers for you that just make you shudder. You know, 47, 49, you know, 136, 359 back, 357, 338. The lack of respect being shown for one of the game's great all-time hitters who is not a steroid cheat, who is not a Sosa, a Bonds, a McGuire, blah, 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 a Pomero, a Manny Ramirez, and Alex Rodriguez, and yet has put up these kinds of numbers. This guy should be trumpeted, should be leading SportsCenter every night, should be leading over on FS1 or CBS or any of the other sports networks that are out there now. For God's sake, somebody shine a positive spotlight on one of the great players of all time who did it the right way. Instead of always focusing on all of those cheers, oh, I know, inductions are next month, and how come Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens aren't in yet? Kiss my royal red butt. Put Albert Pujols' name at the top of your list. Put his name on the tip of your tongue. And when he hits 600, pay him the respect and the praise and the homage that he is due. And oh, by the way, he's 37. And considering what I just said about how he's performed in the last 5 years, when he's been healthy, he's still averaging somewhere around 30 with the Angels in over 100 RBIs. I would not be surprised to see him cross 650 by the time he's done at the age of 39 or so.
At the rate he's going power number-wise, you know, that would project out to something like that. So it still can be done. And, you know, some of the comments in those clips you played, that I'm only left with two options as to, well, he's trailing off and backing into it, as he said in those clips. And there's only two things I could think of. One, the batting average part, as you pointed out.
Yeah, that has dropped.
He has not been a 300 hitter since going to L.A., and there's really no Angel playoff appearances. Essentially, in all that. Those are the only two things I could think of.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And by the way, let me just throw a few more numbers at you just for the sake of understanding how great he has been for how long. And this was also, this is David Schoenfield lighting us up with this one here. Albert Pujols' first career home run came on April 6, 2001, off of John Franco, who started his career in 1984 as a Reds teammate of then player manager Pete Rose, who is still playing, who started his career in 1963. Pujols, homer off of John Franco, and just to give you a little bit of an idea of how much of a period of time that we're, how long he's been great. He also has homered off of 386 career pitchers, 5 Hall of Famers. He has 13 Grand Slams, 15 home runs in extra innings. Has 4 3-homer games in the regular season, plus another one in the World Freaking Series. And he's about to hit his 600th. And nobody cares. That is a staggering, staggering statement about baseball. And that's something Bob Lee kind of asked Terrence Moore, and he kind of dismissed it a little bit and said, no, I don't really think so. Bob Lee said, is this maybe more of a statement about where baseball is in our culture right now? Let me ask you guys. Now, it might be a little unfair, you know, sitting here where we are, you know, because we're in Ohio, and there's an Ohio team just to the east of us in Cleveland that is playing in its third straight NBA Finals that may have propped up the NBA, maybe artificially or maybe temporarily, I don't know. But pretty safe to say that for most of the fans listening to us right now, it's football number one. Browns, Lions, Lions, Browns, whichever side of that. You know that you're on.
Right.
It's got to be basketball based in terms of popularity of the sport, not necessarily about the Pistons and the Cavs versus the Tigers and the Indians.
Right.
But basketball is at a very, very high point right now because of this crazy trilogy, this three match that's going on between the Cavaliers and the Warriors. Would we agree on that?
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
Baseball checks in now. The Indians could have really changed all of that, too, because they went to the World Series. Had they closed out the Chicago Cubs and won their first World Championship since 48. If they had won their first World Championship since 48 and done it in the same year that the Cavs won, that might have changed the story, but they didn't. And so here we are. Our little location, our little geographical corner of the baseball world might not be the very best sampling place, if you will. But I think Bob Lee's onto something here when he says, you know, what does it say about baseball's place in our culture? Maybe baseball is slipping a little bit in terms of the national consciousness, in terms of the national profile and the national popularity. And maybe that's why a guy like Albert Pujols chased for what was once an extraordinary feat, only 3 players ever had hit 600 home runs. He's about to do it naturally as a great guy, not a cocky punk, not a guy who has gotten himself in trouble with the law, not a guy who has been busted cheating, just a tremendous ambassador to the game. Albert Pujols is being ignored. Maybe it isn't about Pujols. Maybe it is about baseball and its place in our sporting lives.
That partly might be it because, you know, he mentioned it. It was mentioned in, among other things, in that clip. I mean, he plays for the Angels. Now, we all know even if you've never been there, you all kind of get the impression that, yeah, the Angels would blatantly be second fiddle in that town to the Dodgers when it comes to baseball. But you're still talking the L.A. market. It's not like he's doing this in Minnesota or Pittsburgh or something. He's doing it in L.A., and it's still not getting any pop.
But in part, though, what's weird about that, when you say L.A., you would think that means it should get all the pub because it's L.A., second media market, blah, blah, blah.
Right. That's kind of where
but
I am
it is,
going
but
that.
It is West Coast. You know, we don't see many of the games in L.A. because they come on at 10:07, you know, right. Out here in the East Coast. So we don't. It's not prime time. Jeter's exploits, A-Rod's exploits all happening, you know, prime time East Coast style, the whole country sees it because it's on at 7 o'clock and it's on at 4 o'clock there and it goes to 10 here and it goes to 7 there and everybody sees it. You're doing it out there, half of the country's asleep when you're doing what he's doing out there. So I think that matters a little bit. I think that some of the great all-time performances, now that largely was the point that I just made, was largely refuted by Bonds, who was also on the West Coast,
right,
and who everybody followed. But that was still in the remnants of the steroid era that we may or may not have acknowledged at the time, the home run live ball thing. In other words, in 98, when Sammy and McGuire staged the great race for 62, who can be the first one to catch Roger Maris, etc., that run of 4, 5, 6 years that led to Sosa then getting 66 and, you know, McGuire got 70 and then, of course, here comes Bonds got 73. The whole world was watching that race then, and I don't think time zones mattered as much. It's not that big of a national chase, if you will, or event now the way it was then. I think the time zone thing didn't matter as much then, but now that I think it does. Because there isn't a race, there isn't a, you know, Pujols isn't trying to break Hank Aaron's record the way Bonds right. was in terms of all-time home runs. He wasn't shattering McGuire's record the way Bonds was. He's just hitting his 600th and climbing the charts. It's not, you know, an ongoing spectator event, if you will, the way the other was. And because of that, nobody's staying up at night to watch Albert Pujols, even to stay up and watch Mike Trout, quite frankly. To watch them hit, you know, out there on the West Coast for very long.
And there's probably some truth to that. I mean, there's always going, because that's just something in any sport, in any situation, you can't get around when you have the West Coast times. I'll give you that.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. If he was still doing this in St. Louis, would it be a bigger story? Probably. More people
oh,
would
yeah.
see
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it would.
More people would see it. Plus, the Cardinals are, quite frankly, you know, a bigger draw. I don't care about the size of the media market. Kush was talking about L.A. The Cardinals organization, the Cardinals franchise, the model for success that they are, the constantly always in the playoff chase or in the playoffs, no matter what's going on. They reload. They don't rebuild. They're the Patriots of baseball. They're the Cowboys, if you will, of baseball. Well, the Cowboys, bad example these days. Wrong one. But you understand my point. They're yeah. just a model of efficiency, and they're there all the time. And because of that, they are certainly paid a lot more attention to than the Angels are. So if he was still in St. Louis, yeah, I think he would be getting a lot more pub. But I just want to make sure that we do our part to recognize the greatness of Albert Pujols, who, when he retires, will retire as one of my favorite players, not just of this generation, but of all time. Did we do our bottom of the hour Sports Center? I can't remember.
We did not.
All right. We should probably shut up for a minute or two, get a Sports Center, check back in, and wrap this bad boy up. Bob France with you. Jim McCushlin is out at Yark for another 17 minutes, selling cars or cleaning them or sleeping in them or something.
He's doing something.
What's that?
Said he's doing something. We don't know what.
Hey, I'm the one that makes him look all pretty for the sale,
man.
That's all it is.
Attaboy. We knew we had you out there for a reason. Wipe down those white walls, will you?
Oh, yeah.
Frank Gargano in the studio as well. Right back with you after this.
PN 106.5 The Ticket.
Yeah, buddy, final segment of the extravaganza. I want to remind you, by the way, about the Michigan International Speedway contest we got going on. How about that? You want to go to MIS? We've got a chance for you to win tickets to each event at MIS the weekend of June 16. To qualify, here's what you got to do. First, the texting short code is 64636. That's the one you want to text it to. What do you want to send them? The phrase MIS ticket. That's it. MIS, M MIS, Michigan International Speedway, MIS ticket. Send that to 64636, and you could be the winner. Good luck from Michigan International Speedway and Toledo's ESPN 106.5, the ticket. Hey, before we're done, I've only got a couple minutes here before the top of the hour, and we get you ready for drive time. I really want to talk for a second about Torrey Smith. I don't know how much you're following this, if at all, but Torrey Smith, who is now a wide receiver for the Philadelphia Eagles, was commenting in response to an NFL owner and their comments on the Colin Kaepernick story. There still seems to be a belief on the part of some that Colin Kaepernick is not on an NFL roster right now, not because he's not good enough, but because he's being blackballed, because he did his protesting all last year. Well, the co-owner of the Giants is John Mara, and he recently commented about the emotional response that the Kaepernick protest drew from his team's fans, particularly. And he said, very simply, Mara told the Monday Morning Quarterback that he's received a number of emotional letters from fans of the Giants saying, if any Giants players ever did what Kaepernick did by kneeling during the national anthem, that those fans would never come to another game. Okay? So Torrey Smith took that to mean Wellington Mara is, or not Wellington Mara, beg your pardon, that's the patriarch. John Mara was essentially orchestrating or participating in some sort of a blackballing of Colin Kaepernick in order to not lose fans. And Torrey Smith went on to say that Kaepernick not having a contract right now with some team, while other guys, other players who have done far worse things do have jobs, that is an example and proof that Kaepernick is being blackballed and, in fact, might be the victim of collusion among the owners. He fired off a number of tweets yesterday, did Torrey Smith, in response to John Mara, which led to a deep conversation about the subject in the Eagles locker room. Torrey Smith wrote this on Monday. It's amazing what folks consider going too far. You can do all kinds of crazy things and get a second chance, but you can't over a protest? And then he went on to say on Twitter, my issue isn't really just the hate on Cap. It's what folks prioritize as wrong. Hit a woman? Cool. Sexual assault? Cool. Kneel? Oh, no. Now, those are just tweets from Torrey Smith. To say that they're misguided is an understatement. I don't know anybody who has said hitting a woman, cool, we'll hire you. Sexual assault on a woman, cool. Kneel during the anthem, no, nobody has ever said that, first of all. Second of all, and by the way, he went on to say, did Torrey Smith about John Mara, I heard he's one of the best owners in the league, so I don't want people to think I'm disrespecting this guy. I'm not, but it's just the fact that he commented about people, the fans, being mad about that, but you just had a kicker on your own team that you were trying to hold on to for dear life until it was too late. He's talking about Josh Brown, who the Giants actually released in October after domestic violence accusations against him. Smith went on to say, I believe in second chances. I think you have to be open-minded to know that Kaepernick did not commit a crime. He didn't hurt anybody. He didn't do anything. It was a protest. And now people are kind of locking him out, he said, or don't want to support anybody that's associated with him when you're willing to support people who beat women and all other kinds of crazy things. It makes no sense. I bring you this just so that I can respond to it the way I did on Twitter, and I tweeted it directly back at Torrey Smith. Not that he'll pay any attention to me. He's got tons of followers, but I just, you know, just want to be consistent here. Enough with the blackballing narrative. Enough with the he's being punished for protesting narrative. Have you ever considered that maybe most GMs and player personnel directors just kind of consider him to be a crappy passer, which he is, who wants way too much money to join some team as a backup? That's bottom line. People said Blaine Gabbert got a job over him. It wasn't apples to apples. It wasn't like Gabbert said, I'll play for this amount. Kaepernick said, I'll play for the same amount. And they chose Gabbert. Kaepernick wants way too much money, in addition to being a headache, in addition to not being very good. Torrey Smith went on to say, at this time of the year, there's 96 quarterbacks, figuring roughly three a roster. There's 96 quarterbacks. You can't tell me that 96 guys are better than Colin Kaepernick. And my response would be, many of them are, but a lot of them who aren't are there for a lot less money than Kaepernick wants to be there. And that's the difference. Colin Kaepernick is not being blackballed any more than Jay Cutler was blackballed. He was released by the Bears. Kaepernick requested and got his release from the 49ers. Both are in the open market. Both have had really good years. Both have had Pro Bowl caliber years, at least at one time. Kaepernick just once, Cutler a few times. Neither one of them could get jobs. Kaepernick got so frustrated, or not Kaepernick, Cutler got so frustrated with it, he gave up and quit and said, all right, I'm going to go broadcast for Fox. Kaepernick is still hunting. It doesn't mean he was blackballed. It doesn't mean he's being colluded against. It means he's a crappy passer. Most GMs realize it, and they're not going to overpay for a crappy passer, especially one who brings headaches. It's just that simple. And that, my friends, is how we have to leave it this time around. Thanks for being a part of the show. Tomorrow, day one, game one of the NBA Finals, long awaited. We'll have a preview
about time
for you. Where they, what's that?
About time, huh?
About damn time is right, yes. We'll have a preview of game one with Eddie Meissonette from the Bay Area, where the Cavaliers and Warriors will get it on in game one of the NBA Finals. We'll talk a little more baseball tomorrow as well, and hopefully you'll be a part of the conversation then as well. Stay where you are, because Drive Time is coming up next right here on The Ticket. Have a good one.